The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and can you believe that this longtime era of the Real Housewives of New Jersey is over as we know it? It hasn't sunk in yet, but it's kind of crazy, right? I mean, this has been going on for years. These women are Real Housewives of New Jersey. Who knows what it's going to look like going forward or what that future looks like for all of them? But it's wild to think about. Again, and it has not sunk in. And that question of what that future of the show will look like, it's a question that we've explored a lot on this podcast with a variety of guests. And I'm sure we'll continue to do so in the future because that's what we do around here. We provide informed speculation, I would say. And it's an interesting topic to think about because it's also like it could go in a variety of different directions. And I think, you know, I don't think that they're going to make any rash decisions right now. It sounds like they won't go into production until at least 2025. So we have some time. But, you know, I'll have a full Real Housewives of New Jersey season 14 end of season deep dive for you as our Friday episode this week. I wanted to wait just a few days to give me some breathing room from Sunday night's watch party special to really process it. And I like to see also how a lot of people online are reacting to it. So I wanted to do all that before I recorded, you know, what we do on the show, which is when a big show ends, we do an end of season deep dive. So the Real Housewives of New Jersey one will come at the end of this week. And we have a great guest coming on who has not been on the show before, but she has been really on the front lines of some of the reporting around production of this season. So I'm hoping that will be worth the wait for you guys. I wanted to make sure to mention this. I'm on the latest episode of Carlos King's podcast, Reality with the King. Carlos has been on the show before. He is a former Housewives producer. He was a producer on seasons 1 and 2 of Real Housewives of New Jersey. So he knows what he's talking about. I've been on his show before, but you know, he has me on a lot to talk about Jersey because we come at it from different perspectives. I tend to fall on the Melissa Margaret kind of point of view, and he tends to fall on the Teresa point of view. And we keep it cute, we keep it respectful, we keep it demure. If you know, you know. But yeah, so he wanted to have me on to end this season, and we talked all about the Off the Rails special. We really analyzed it, and we also went really back and forth a lot on what we want and think the cast will look like moving forward on The Real Housewives of New Jersey. So again, we come at it from different perspectives, and I think the conversation was really fruitful. So I wanted to make sure to point out that I think is coming out today, Tuesday. So look out for that wherever you get your podcasts. But today on Gabbing with Gib, we will be talking about the Off the Rails special. We'll also be talking about just the latest drama on Real Housewives of Orange County, which is having a fantastic season. We got into the Shannon and Tamra of it all, how Tamra's behaving on the show right now, the Shannon and Alexis of it all, Gina and Emily, the new addition Katie, all that. We also got into the very unexpected news that came out on Friday that Stassi Schroeder, formerly of Vanderpump Rules, famously got fired in 2020. She is finally making her big return to reality TV, and it's on Vanderpump Villa, but she's also getting her own show, and they're both on Hulu. Definitely unexpected. And I unpacked that for you today. To help me unpack all of that and talk through all of that, we have on Tom Smythe, who is a writer who, you know, writes a lot about Bravo and reality TV. And he runs the fantastic Bravo meme account, Milk and Don't Call Me Honey, which is that account that posts the black and white sort of like etchings of Housewives and Bravo moments with the quotes from those moments broken out as sort of like poems. I mean, they are poetry, but you know what I mean? I'm sure you've seen these posts. I'm sure you might even already follow the account, but it's a parody of Milk and Honey. So Tom had some great insights and takes, and I think you'll really enjoy this one. So keep listening for my chat with Tom Smythe about all things Real Housewives and Stassi Schroeder's big reveal. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with writer Tom Smythe, who is also the creator of the iconic Instagram account Milk and Don't Call Me Honey. Tom, I haven't seen you since the 15th anniversary party for Watch What Happens Live in June. How are you?
I'm good. That was a wild ride, that party. That was like Disneyland, but Bravo.
It felt very... It wasn't a very crowded party, I would say. So it felt like very much like we were like kind of in the sort of inner sanctum, I would say, that night.
Yeah. It was when you spend the night kind of in the corner with Heather Gay, talking her through how to go up and approach her favorite Bravo celebrities. That's a wild one for sure. I think her up being like, no, you can do it. Go talk to Teresa. And she's like, are you sure? I don't know.
Yeah, we also spent a good amount of time talking to Whitney Rose from Salt Lake. Yeah. And we were hearing about what now is public, which is like this rebrand of her beauty brand. What else kind of stood out to you from that night, just before we jump into everything?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was very funny hearing about that rebrand, because in the moment I was like, Godhaunt had no idea what she was talking about. I was like, I was like, wait, what exactly is happening to Wild Rose Beauty? And then when it was announced, I was like, oh, this is what was going on. But yeah, it was very fun to kind of hear about that, talk to Heather. I mean, it was also, I think, a big highlight too is the weird pairings that were there. I mean, Teresa and Melissa right. were both there, opposite sides of the room. A lot of the Summer House cast were Craig was there with Paige, I think, and Kyle was there. So it was all these sort of people, and you could tell who was trying to like put together, wait, how does so-and-so stand with them right now and this? But they sort of just threw everyone in and hope for the best.
100%. I think that Melissa and Teresa had handlers sort of keeping them separate. But other than that, people were left to their own devices. So
yeah, they had the gay shark on it.
Exactly. All right. So, Tom, I did want to start just by getting your thoughts on some news that came out on Friday. So there's been sort of this like long simmering hope, I think, with a lot of the fandom, not everybody, but some people really wanting Stassi back in the fold. And she's kind of always maintained she doesn't really have that much interest in it. It's too toxic. But then on Friday, we get this pretty surprise news that she is joining season 2 of Vanderpump Villa, which is over on Hulu. And that also as part of, I'm guessing as part of sort of the agreement of doing that show, she's also getting her own spinoff called Stassi Says at Hulu. What was your initial read on that whole announcement and that reveal?
Yeah, well, when it was announced, people took to the streets. They were celebrating. They were clanging pots and pans. Confetti was going all over. I enjoy Stassi. I was excited that she's going to be back on TV. I know that they wanted her back for The Valley. And that was sort of what she was saying about not wanting to, you know, it's toxic. She's moved past that, which is very funny thinking back to like season one Stassi. That
exactly.
Now, like, oh, this is too much. I feel like I've been tricked because I did not watch Vanderpump Villa because I felt like, oh, it's kind of just trying to, like, it just felt like Hulu wanted in on the Vanderpump business.
Totally.
And it felt a little too contrived. It kind of reminded me of Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club.
It's very that vibe, like trying to be like Vanderpump Rules, but also a Below Deck element with the rotating people. But it never quite clicked.
And so now they've got me, which I'm kind of annoyed by because I've got. Like, they know I'm going to watch now because Stassi's going to be probably terrorizing these young service workers. And that harkens back to the good old days of Vanderpump Rules. I mean, the kind of pairing with her own show, Stassi Says, like you said, it kind of was immediately clear that, like, I'm assuming the only reason she's doing Vanderpump Villa is that was part of the deal with Hulu. I feel like from what I can garner about her new show, it feels like it's a good fit for what she wants to do right now. I'm sure she wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't, but it feels like something that's maybe a little bit more structured reality, a little bit more, could be simple life-ish. It could sort of be like kind of Lady Gang-esque, where it's an extension of her podcast or something along those lines. But yeah, I think there's definitely, I think people have a very, especially Bravo people, because those shows are all done in a very certain way, that we kind of expect that, okay, if someone's doing a reality show, it has to look like X, Y, and Z. And I think that there's actually room for a lot of different kinds of, you know, there's room to play around in that medium, in that artistic medium of reality TV. And I'm excited to see what exactly Stassi Says.
100%. No, I think it's really telling. Like, so Deadline reported this first, and they said that that Stassi Says is a new half-hour docu-comedy series. And it's like, you know, the log line is, she's endlessly relatable, utterly hysterical, unquestionably sane. She's the anchor of this fresh ensemble of comedy and chaotic characters. So it's very much like, you know, The Valley without the accusations and the getting drunk and the sort of desperation that came with that. I think that she was smart to wait a beat. It sort of reminds me probably of what kind of before she got let go from Bravo, her and Bo had this sort of like online spinoff thing that wasn't on Bravo, but like there was like this like sort of web series about them that signaled to me that Bravo was going all in on Stassi before they weren't. And I think it's going to have probably that same sort of feel of just like, they're a funny couple, you know, they're sort of like, they have this effortlessly sort of charming thing about them, you know? But I think what you said is interesting, because it's like, it does make you think about, okay, you know, what are the options of somebody like Stassi or a Nini or a Bethany who, like, they can't really go back to Bravo. I think Stassi, the door was open, but she now has chosen to go with a different media conglomerate, basically. But like, that signals to me, like, okay, like, could other people model this sort of, if this works for Stassi? I think it's sort of, it's going to be telling, I think, because I don't know. Like you said, like, we're going to be watching season two of Vanderpump Villa for her. And then we're also going to be checking out Stassi Says, hoping it's good, you know?
I wonder if Stassi Says was like shopped to Bravo.
I'm curious.
Or if maybe Hulu went to her for Vanderpump Villa and that's how this came about. But
yeah, my read is that it was sort of negotiated to like join Vanderpump Villa, help us sort of like make a better impact. Because I watched the first couple episodes because I interviewed some of the people on it to get time with Lisa. But it just, I didn't stick with it because it didn't feel authentic to me. It didn't feel...
Yeah.
It wasn't super appealing, but we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of people who are sort of like, actually, I do want to get your read on this, because I think there's a lot of people who like think that like she should just sort of remain off screen for what she did and she shouldn't ever get the second chance. But I think a lot of those same people are people who herald Kristen Doty as like the people's princess, who like love her on The Valley and will stick by her on The Valley. But what they did was the same thing, you know? And so I'm curious what your read is on sort of the different treatment and different paths of Stassi and Kristen.
I find it interesting. I mean, if people kind of are like absolutely not on those two, that's totally valid.
Yeah, 100%. But
it's the hypocritical nature of if you treat one way and the other the other, then it's like, well, you kind of have to at least acknowledge that you're playing by two different roles with the two of them. And I mean, it's sort of like bringing logic to the emotions of a Bravo, like fandom is kind of learned. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. And I think, and I mean, then there's the Jax, like there's so many different kind of examples of wrongdoing and then how people adapt to that once, if they come back, if they want them back. And I think it's not just this situation, but many situations that Bravo finds itself in where someone in its cast gets in trouble. It's really tough because they hire these people to misbehave.
Yes.
And then when they misbehave, Bravo's sort of like half in, half out. Are we supposed to dis? Are we not? Like, how do we? So it becomes very kind of gray and muddled and messy. And it just is, it's tough to bring like reason and logic to it because everything is so fluid with all of that because of just the nature of the business that they're in.
Yeah. And sort of the changing sort of cultural expectations around them as well, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So let's shift gears. Let's talk about The Real Housewives of New Jersey. So Sunday night, Off the Rails Watch Party special aired, which effectively sort of just brought this era of Jersey Housewives as we know it to an end, as far as we know. I mean, it's very unclear what the future looks like. But speaking about the Off the Rails special itself, what did you make of it? Did you, I mean, I had pretty low expectations, but I'm curious what you sort of went into it expecting and then sort of what you ended up feeling.
I thought it was interesting. I'm glad they did something just because, you know, I'm always excited to see something new, even format-wise, even something weird like this.
Sure.
I don't think it accomplished all that much. If anything, I hope the lasting impact that this has is a reboot of the People's Couch, because that's essentially what this was. It was just them watching their own show. So it was like a little interesting to see, not even them watch and react to like the big high intensity moments, but even just the kind of their home scenes and watch them get to see that for the first time and see kind of what that experience is like.
Yeah.
When Bella came out and Marge was like, my poor dead dog. I was like, wait a minute, what? But just like little weird idiosyncrasies like that was interesting to watch them watch. But then once they got to the scenes at Rails, I don't know if anyone else felt this way, but I felt like I was dizzy because I was like, wait, which they were flashing back between them at Rails then and them at Rails now. And I just was thinking about the logistics and like producers must have been like, wear something totally different than what you wore for
wear white.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, it was interesting. It was, and having the two rooms and Dolores go back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also was like, you know, the first couple parts, I was sort of like, are they ever going to like pause to talk about this, some of that stuff? And they started to pause it. And then as a viewer, I started to get anxious over like, it's one room ahead of the other room, and like in terms of watching the episode, and then how is that going to affect if Dolores wants to come back into the other room? And it's just like, it, I was thinking the same way that you were. I was sort of like, how is this, how are they keeping sort of steady here?
Yeah, what are the logistics of this? And like also when they, and I might have misheard, but when they first arrived, it sort of seemed, or it sounded like producers were like, oh, pick whichever room you wanna. And I was like, obviously they're gonna pick what they're gonna pick, but I'm like, you need more order than that. This can't be a free for all. Like, obviously it's not gonna be because they're so divided, but I'm like, this can't be wishy-washy. You need a strict plan of who's going where, who's sitting where, shoot this, like.
Right. Yeah, but I guess what that really affects, it's sort of like, where's Dolores going to go? Where's Jen Fessler going to go? It tells us kind of where she has stood, you know, in the time since they filmed. It's sort of like, I don't know if you watched American Idol back in the day, but when George Huff was told to stand between the two groups and he chose the wrong bottom the night that Jennifer Hudson got out, that's sort of like an iconic moment. It's like, pick your side. You know, the other thing that I thought about in terms of structure wise was sort of like, there were moments where they started to hash it out. They started to talk things through sort of on their own accord. But it left me wanting more of that. Like, even if we didn't need Andy there, we didn't need whatever. But I do wish that like a producer had been sitting there sort of like in the after show, sort of prodding them with more questions and sort of stimulating the conversation more, because I felt like there were, even though we were never going to get like Melissa and Teresa going head to head, or Jennifer and Danielle, or Margaret and Teresa, there were instances where things could have been talked out within the individual rooms that I think was left on the table, you know?
For sure. There were things at the end, I think, even the Jen and Danielle hairstylist like argument.
Yes.
Where I was like, oh, wait a minute. We didn't even like kind of touch on that. Like there was no, because that sort of felt like, I mean, there was so much that was so far gone that I understand why a reunion was pointless. But that was something that felt just like normal housewives that could be kind of dissected and dug into a little bit more and kind of figured out the truth or like whatever was going on. And it was just kind of left as is because, and I felt this way because it is this way, where I think Bravo and the producers are just like, well, there's no point in doing all of that because there's, we're done. Like, so we're not gonna fix these little things.
Right. But I guess like from my point of view, it's, you know, that's one issue with them just watching the finale. They didn't watch any packages from earlier in the season, but also, Let's say they come back and they do bring back the Teresa, Jackie, Jennifer side of things. Maybe that's who they build a cast. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. I still wanted resolution. I wanted to see Jackie react to Teresa saying that she was just initially using her for intel on Margaret. I wanted them to talk about that, but we've never seen them talk about that. Or let's say you go with the other side. I don't think that Dolores and Margaret really were completely hashed out watching that fight back, and particularly the confessionals that we're seeing for the first time. Like either way, like that's something that if they go with a certain side of this group, if they do that, there is some stuff that needs to be resolved, I guess. That again, I just wish we could have seen a little bit of that.
Maybe they're saving it for later. They're like, we're only bringing two people back. We need something to start off.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Was there anything else that sort of stood out to you from this in terms of like even just their individual reactions to certain things?
Something that stood out, not just about this like last episode, but just even how the season has sort of been presented to us, is realizing like, oh, Dolores really is center meatball or whatever. Like she is the anchor of this show, largely because Teresa has ended up so far on one end of the spectrum in terms of the like two sides of this feud. By kind of being in the middle, Dolores has made herself the reliable, safe anchor face of New Jersey in a way. Even just watching her like not just go back and forth between the rooms, but the way she sits in the rooms is very like, old school Caroline Manzo, like matriarch to matriarch. Like that's very like, oh, this is Jersey. Like this is, she's in the driver's seat of the show. And I hope she remains.
I feel like she's leaned into that position more in the past year or two. And I think that that was something that she got criticized for a lot, sort of remaining Switzerland. But I don't think that that's something you can really criticize her for at this point. I do think within the watch party, you really did see firsthand how she's able to do that and like sort of spin things. So like she sits in Teresa's room at first, and then after the fight airs and they'd flash to Margaret's dog as an excuse to go upstairs and check in on that room, Dolores says, I'm gonna go check on Margaret because it must have been hard for her to see that dog. Whereas like it was definitely because she wanted to like make sure it was okay between her and Margaret, but like that was her excuse that she gave to Teresa and all them to go upstairs. It was just interesting seeing sort of how she handles and how she really words some of those things.
Yeah, she's good at it. She's a pro. And she's one of those characters that when they come on the show, you're like, okay, cool, this is the normal one. And with time, you realize, oh, no, they're phenomenal at the job at hand, the job of being a housewife. Dolores is so good at it. She can be super relatable, but that doesn't mean she's sacrificing the like bombacity or the over the top, the screaming, calling Marge the C word. Like, we're not losing that just because she's seemingly normal and relatable and cool. Like, it's kind of best of both with Dolores. And I would love them to kind of lean more. And she's kind of an OG in the sense that like, they wanted to cast her for season one. She turned them down. She was in the background. She was on like those first few seasons cast trips at time. Like, she was around, which has that like gravitas, even though she came in late. It's sort of like Dorinda, where
exactly
still has that essence of like, this is the good old days of the show while still being fresh. And I think that it would be really interesting for them to lean into her a little bit more. I want to see more of who are her like actual like friends out in the world. I would love to see them bring on like Frank's fiance, Brittany. Like there's just more to kind of excavate there.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So last thing on Jersey, Andy kept saying, we'll all understand why they forewent a reunion once we saw the finale. We'll get it. I've seen a lot of people comment in the past 24 hours. They still don't get it. Do you understand why we didn't get a Jersey reunion?
I do. I also understand people who still want one. Because like you were saying, it left a lot to be desired. And I think it just came down to, is that desire have a payoff in the long run in terms of like next season? Like what's going to, is it worth it depending on what happens next season? But when I watched the finale, I was sort of like, okay, this feels like we're already kind of going in circles. The presence of Andy isn't going to fix right. that. And the structure of it isn't going to fix it. It's just going to be us still running in circles, but just we're running in circles about this topic. Now we're running in circles about this topic. Now we're running in circles about that. Like it's, again, fool's errand. Like I just didn't see it working kind of in a similar way when The Valley was airing and people really wanted a reunion for that, which I did and still gladly would have taken. But when I watched that finale, I was like, okay, this was sort of cut in a way that I understand the reasoning because they did sort of check in to tie up those loose ends. So, you know, it's very rare for a Bravo fan to agree with a network decision, but I understand where they were coming from. And I just felt like it would have just kind of prolonged our suffering and just put us out of our misery with this instead.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. All right, Tom, let's move on to The Real Housewives of Orange County. How are you enjoying this season so far? What are your sort of top line thoughts on what we're seeing?
I love it. I feel like when they started bringing, when they brought back Heather and Tamara, it was at the same time that they rebooted New York. And I sort of felt like that was a moment for Bravo where it was two paths diverge in the woods.
Yes.
We're going to figure out what works when a show has sort of hit a wall. And I think OC has sort of come out on top of that so far. I think that it is killing it. I think it's at like top of its game. They're all bringing something to the table. Even Gina and Emily have
absolutely
rich like solo scenes. And I think that, I mean, poor Shannon, I cannot believe what they are putting Shannon Bedore through, but it's phenomenal television. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you think about Tamara because it's such an interesting season for her. And I'm like, she's one of those few housewives for me where I'm like, she manages to walk that line of being both a cast member and a producer, sort of like Lisa Rinna. And for the most part, the two of them, I think, get away with it way more than anyone else who attempts it does. But it feels like a very conscious decision this year for her to be horrible and just be like, I know I'm being horrible. It's for the good of the show. And just lean into that. But I'm curious what you make of that whole.
Yeah, like I appreciate what she's done for the show since coming back. I appreciate like just her willingness to sort of just like to stir it up. And to I think that something that Tamara's probably realized maybe through her 2T's journey, maybe through being just like really associated with Teddy is like, I don't think Tamara cares that much about being liked. You know, I think that is like, that's something that like a newer housewife that is, I've always said, is sort of the Achilles heel of the sort of next gen of housewives is they all really want to be well-liked and brand friendly and all this stuff. And I think Tamara realizes that like, that's kind of an overrated quality. And if you're willing to be unlikable and to stick your neck out like that, it helps the show. And ultimately, I think it helps her. But I do think that the Shannon stuff, especially in this past episode, it kind of showed itself of like, I think that she's towing that line really well up until right now. And I think that right now she miscalculated a little bit how it's almost like we haven't gotten enough good reasoning from her about like why she's ending her friendship with Shannon. Like I understand like she, mm-hmm. you know, she thinks that Shannon should not be drinking. She thinks she doesn't want to be associated with that. She, you know, she's been given the runaround so much, but she's being so harsh on somebody who's going through a lot. And yeah, a lot of what Shannon's going through is her own doing. But it's still hard, you know, and I think a lot of people see it as like, you should be just be a good friend for her, be there right now. But like, just even looking at how fans are reacting to her right now, it's like people really don't respect what she's doing. And I don't know, I think that last season she was doing a lot, but people still respected what she was doing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like last season, and I feel like we're getting a lot of last season stuff. I feel like that was resolved with just a Band-Aid over it. And now that Band-Aid couldn't sustain what has happened now. And so it's kind of just bringing all of that back. I feel like I can already like see the reunion because I'm used to the pattern of
Tamara.
So I know the reunion's going to come. We'll get her hitting the reset button. We'll get the teary apology and, oh, I was so terrible, blah, blah, blah. Probably we'll get another Trace Amigos hug, like that classic.
Yeah.
Then she can reset for next season to do it all over again. I feel like it works. It's very calculated. But again, it's one of the few people on these shows who has been able to pull that off in a way. But yeah, it's very bizarre because she's just leaning in so hard to just, I'm actually just going to be a supervillain this season. And that's...
And you have to respect, we have to respect our villains. We do.
But absolutely.
These shows are sort of, it's make or break it, depending on if you have a villain or not, to be honest. And like, I do think that like, she's basically like, I will do my job so well, almost I'm doing it too well, almost where I'm like, she's basically sacrificing her real life, some of her real life friendships for the sake of the show in some ways. I do wonder like how much that cycle, when it can be broken, when somebody can sort of like flip it on her in some ways, because she's in the driver's seat right now on the show. And it's sort of like at some point somebody's going to take over that wheel. But I'm so curious, like who it will be and when sort of thing. You know what I mean?
And when someone finally has had like enough, like when Shannon, like, yes, the reunion might come and she might give that teary apology, but Shannon very well might just be like,
say, like, fuck you.
Enough of it. Like, this is crazy. Like, I can't keep, especially, I mean, after the season, I'm like, Shannon Bedore needs hazard pay. She needs, like, imagine showing up to work and being dealt the hand that she was dealt this season and just being like,
all right. Yep.
Here we go. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that, like, I do think that Shannon's done for good. I don't know if she'll take Tamara back, at least so quickly at the reunion. I think that one thing that's working in her favor is that the audience, I think a lot of people were excited about the prospect of Alexis coming back and she's dating John Jansen, all this stuff. It's such a juicy storyline. It's such, you know, it's such a good log line for the season. But Alexis is not coming across well at all, which kind of puts more people in Shannon's corner. And I also think what's interesting, what Shannon can't help is to give her reaction. Tamara wants the reaction out of Shannon, and she's getting the reaction out of Shannon. Shannon got up from that dinner table and she ran away teary, and she was yelling and crying. I think if you compare what she does to what Jen Padranchi, how she reacts to Tamara now, she was brought on by Tamara and kind of thrown under the bus immediately last year. Tamara has not stuck by her. And I think that Jen is actually seeing, has she saw the writing on the wall more quickly. And I think that she, just with a little bit more time, kind of has it in her to take it to Tamara, just as she kind of finds her footing a little bit more in different areas of her life. I do think that like she sees who Tamara is. And I think that she's not going to give the reaction very much anymore.
Yeah, she adjusted.
Yes.
She was like, oh, okay, I have to like act accordingly. Whereas Shannon has no poker face. She's not going to play.
Yeah, exactly.
She's out the door before you could even say play it cool. Like, it was funny. I interviewed Shannon right before the season started, and I had just seen the premiere. And the first thing I said was, I was like, oh, congratulations on the new season. And I'm trying to remember her exact wording, but I was dying because she said, yeah, I guess a lot of people are excited about it, but I'm not thrilled. And she basically was saying, like, obviously, I think she was nervous because even going into filming it, now going into it coming out, on paper, it could be a very tough season for her with the audience. Like, you know,
Coming out
that DUI, that could be really, and yet, largely because A, I think people just love her, and B, because of the shit she's put up with from the rest of her cast, I feel like the audience has rallied around her in such a way that she probably didn't expect. And I said that to her, having only watched the premiere at the end of the interview. I was like, because again, she was like, she seemed nervous about how the audience would respond to her. And that's why I think she was so firm about taking accountability and putting that all out there. And really, and I was like, no, I think everyone's going to be on your team. Like the way Tamara, like from the gate, was just vicious. I was like, that's the kind of the best thing that could have ever happened to Shannon in terms of the audience, in terms of the show.
Yeah. It's almost like if it had just been the DUI and her keep and her maintaining drinking and not abstaining from drinking, people would have been really turned off by that. Mm-hmm. But because of Tamara and how she's treating her and ending their friendship, because of Tamara befriending Alexis, because of Alexis even just being there to begin with and rubbing her relationship with John and Shannon's face, that immediately kind of wipes everything else out, honestly. It kind of trumps that in terms of just like the relationship aspect of it. That's sort of what people see. It's, you know, on a human level, it's kind of fucked up, right? Like it, within the show terms, you know, I can think differently about it, but it endears the audience to her immediately again. It really does. Sure.
Yeah. And speaking of Alexis, I'm curious, how did your expectation or hope of hearing that she was coming back and what that could possibly look like, how does that compare to what we've actually gotten?
Yeah, I'm still glad she's there. Like, I think that it's such a compelling setup, you know, and, you know, it's not very kind to Shannon, but that's just sort of the nature of reality TV. It happened to Quad on Married to Medicine last season. It's happening to Shannon now. But I think I underestimated, and I was talking about this with Danny and Evan from Page Six in a recent episode where we were talking about, like, by being a friend of Alexis is there to support the cast. She is not a full-time cast member. So she does not get as much of a well-rounded edit. So essentially she is there and all we hear from her is John Jansen, Shannon, John Jansen, Shannon, John Jansen, Shannon. Yeah. We hear nothing else from her. And it makes it seem like her entire personality is bragging about her relationship with John. And I believe that that's probably what she talks about over half the time. But, you know, we get no, you know, at-home scenes with her. We get no talking about her kids and some of the really kind of amazing mothering that she's been doing over the years. And so I think that I underestimated how much that would affect how we're kind of supposed to feel about her as audience members. She's not doing herself any favors, but she's also really not necessarily being set up for success. You know what I mean?
Totally. And I never really thought of it that way, because that is such a good point about how the show sets her up to be perceived. Because
yeah,
when they said she was coming back, I was excited to see, and I hated her first run. I did not. I just was like, oh, this might be my least favorite housewife. With time, I've come to appreciate what she brought to the show at the time. But I was excited, even with that, I was excited that she was coming back, because I felt that so much had changed in her life since then. I was really excited to see her kind of free from Jimmy the Cimbalino. I was excited to see her as the mother of a trans son, as you were referencing her mothering, and like that was an arc that, especially with Heather, I really wanted. And I
exactly
will.
I hope we still see that. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Things like that. I was like, oh, this might be a totally new perspective on this person, a new side to her, or at least getting to see an evolution. But yeah, I guess you're right. Those are things that would definitely probably be more apparent if we got those solo scenes, if we got a more full picture of her instead of just in relation to the cast, which then really emphasizes the Shannon and John stuff.
Yeah, totally. And it's not all that. I think that she's not, I mean, some of her confessionals are super cringe, and just like the dueling lawsuits of it all, like being with two men who have sued Shannon, and like,
you know, that's her kink. Men who sue Shannon Bedore.
Jesus. No, it's like where there's smoke, there's fire when it comes to that stuff. But I am curious if we get just a little bit more of like a well-rounded version of her going forward in this season, because there's a lot of time left in this season. But it definitely isn't landing quite the same as I expected it to land, I guess. The last thing I sort of want to, I guess, ask about with Orange County is we do have a new housewife in Katie. Mm-hmm. And she came in really strong against Heather. And Heather's kind of in the press calling her Noella 1.5 and all these, and calling her a super fan. And I mean, she's bringing up the paparazzi photos, which were talked about at the last reunion in this season that she wasn't even on. I'm curious what you're making of her. If you think that she really is a Noella 1.5, or you think there's more to her, how do you read her?
I hope there's more to her, but I haven't seen it yet. So far, I'm not that enamored with what she's bringing to the table, because like you said, it's just kind of rehashing something from last season, which she's pretending like, oh, I had no idea you guys talked about this. I just saw it like in the paper.
TikTok, right?
Yeah. And on that TikTok, it says in the caption, it says, they talked about this on the show. So it's what she sent. And then the only reply she gets from this guy who's in charge of all paparazzi.
Every paparazzi in LA, yes.
CEO of paparazzi in Katie's phone is yes. That's all he says.
Right.
He said yes. There's no indication that this was the guy Heather called. There's no indication that this wasn't just his take on it. Like,
sure.
He was like, oh, if I had to get, yeah, sure. I'd imagine that this was called because it's weird. It's Disneyland, whatever. But so, yeah, she hasn't really sold me on that whole thing. It's just all of these very kind of little things against Heather. It's the paparazzi thing. It's not saying hi at Sutton's party. It's asking Cynthia about, which I always have to give Cynthia Bailey shout out, but asking like, oh, you know, Katie, like, what do you know? That's such a normal thing to ask.
Right. The clearly accidental tag on the photo, like the, yeah. Like,
Heather with the perfect, like reasonable explanation. And I'm like, oh, duh. Like, yeah, of course that's what. It's not like Heather is this mastermind, like psychological warfare on the new girl. Like, it's such a nothing burger that it's just frustrating. Cause I'm like, at least bring something. Like, I'd rather you just kind of chill out the first four episodes and hang out and get to know than feel like you have to fight with someone from the get go.
Yeah. It's sort of like, it feels like she was advised incorrectly going into the season. And it feels like what happened to NECA, where she came in really strong with Wendy and they were just sort of, all that defines you as a new housewife shouldn't be a misaligned feud, basically, with a longer standing housewife. Like, that should not be what your first five episodes are about. I agree. I think a slower burn for a housewife, show us your personality, show that you're kind of really friends with some of these people. And then at the midway point, come for Heather if you want. But like,
yeah,
it just felt like such a sort of like pre-ordained thing to the point where like, and Heather was always going to sort of win in that matchup. And
statement.
Yeah, exactly.
Heather's going to win.
She really is. And it's also, I think also what we've seen, two straight seasons of people trying to come for Heather. So like having a third from this new person was never going to land. You know, it didn't know what, I didn't like it when Noella did it. Tamra tried too hard to rally everybody against her. And it's not going to work when a new edition does it too. So it's sort of like, all right, after three times, we got to like put it to bed, you know? But I will say, I do think that there's something a little bit more authentic about Katie and like maybe her home scenes that like, that we see in her home scenes, I would say, that like gives me a little bit more hope than I had about Noella. You know, Noella always felt like she was trying too hard. And I think that Katie has a really unique situation going on with her family. It's a very modern family setup. So who knows? But I'm like cautiously more optimistic about her, I guess, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't group her so firmly with Noella the way that Heather had. As it pertains to Heather specifically,
yes, of course.
I understand that comparison. But yeah, Noella was so, so, so much more artificial and like contrived of lights, camera, and me without a stitch of makeup, whereas
Katie
does feel a little bit more authentic, a little bit more
real.
Yeah, exactly. And it just feels like she kind of came onto the show and she opened her welcome packet and it said, feud, you've been assigned Heather Dubrow. And she was like, oh, okay, I guess I have to figure out how to do that. And it's just like, it comes from a very two-dimensional view of what the show is, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. It's sort of like, this is not what it's really about. This is what happens, but it's not what it's not the objective in some ways. Actually, the last thing I did want to talk about with OC, one more thing, the Gina and Emily of it all. I feel like Gina in particular, to me, is having a really good season. Like, I think that she, with Jen around, with Katie around now, it sort of puts Gina in sort of like a mid-tenured position on the show, and she feels, I almost feel like it gives her more confidence in terms of how she operates within the show. Emily, I think, is like, for me at least, I still feel like she's calibrating exactly what works for her in terms of like, because she can come off a little bit as a mean girl, I think, in some of the confessionals and things, how she talks about people. But they're both, I mean, they're both sort of in that sort of, what is it, six seasons now or something? Like, they've been around.
Maybe seven, yeah.
Seven, yeah. So it's sort of like, they're in that. They're in the show. And then I think it's given them more confidence in terms of how they are in the group almost.
For sure. And it almost feels like they just realized how long they've been on too.
Yeah, totally.
Like it feels like for the past 5 or 6, they have been like the JV girls.
Yeah.
Like these are the junior varsity players and they're kind of on the fringe. And I think part of that's because they came on together. And that almost creates, I've seen it on other casts where it almost creates like a hierarchy.
Yeah.
And that has just kind of remained rather than them get fully like, especially with them bringing back like OGs, like that kind of delayed their promotion almost in a way because they were bringing back the people coming back were like Tamara and Heather. So that wasn't changing their place on the food chain. And it does feel like this season, I think in part with Jen coming on and Katie, like you said, it just feels like they looked up and were like, oh, we're actually here to stay. Like we're on this show and it's a little bit of confidence that they've settled into. And yeah, I feel like they're having great seasons. I think that Gina's having her Bob season and she's a real estate mogul and she's has her sights set on $1 million listing OC. And they have great individual storylines too. I mean, the stuff with Travis, that was so great about the season too, is tuning in and being like, you know what you know from the news, but then kind of seeing all of this other stuff that I didn't know that
we had no idea about this Travis stuff, really.
Yeah. And that's such like a rich storyline to get to delve into. I will say the Jen Pedranti stuff is such good television, but it's also crazy to watch Gina and Emily be unbelievably just mean about her money problems and just blatantly making fun of her for being poor. Like it's so wild. But again, like we were saying with Tamara, good TV, good for the show, good for the conflict, and Gina's whole peg to it is the real estate stuff. But I mean, to get a line out of this season of Jen on the phone with Shannon being like, I thought as a woman who lived in a casita, she'd understand, is so funny.
Brilliant. And that's actually, she does understand and she doesn't want to be that person anymore. So she, exactly. Like that.
You're down here. Like I've moved past that.
Totally. You know, learn from my mistakes. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's totally like emboldened both of them that they have someone, they just feel a little bit higher up on the food chain and it's created a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And the other thing about the Gina and Emily, like sort of ascending in the ranks, the flip side of that is also they're needed by the sort of even more tenured women. So like Shannon came into that premiere, apologized immediately to Gina because she saw that she needed an ally and Shannon needed Gina for the first time in that way. And Gina probably recognized that and was like, all right, like let's play ball sort of thing. Yeah. So it shows itself from all sides, really.
For sure. And I think that takes them off guard too, because they're like, wait, you're talking to me? Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, Tom, this has been so fun. I so appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
Where can people find your writing, follow you, plug all the things before we sign off?
So I write all over. I do a lot of Bravo stuff. Anything I write can be found on my socials, which are @Tom_Smythe_ on Instagram and Twitter. And like you mentioned, Milk and Don't Call Me Honey on Instagram is a Housewives themed meme account, essentially. So.
You've definitely seen the repost of it. You probably already follow it, to be honest, but it's one of my favorite accounts on Instagram. Tom, thanks for doing this. And hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks again for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me @GibSonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib @GabbingWithGib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.